Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Ryan Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove, your home for fantasy MMA. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 193 event, which takes place in Melbourne, Australia. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will be breaking down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Briefly looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC Fight Night 77 and Bellator 145 went 1-3 to lose 5.2 units overall. We won our bet on Daniel Strauss for Bellator, but lost our plays on Abel Trujillo, Jan Cabral, and Pedro Munhoz. We did manage to win our free bet on the Trujillo-Tibau under 2.5 rounds total. Back to the present, UFC 193 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on pay-per-view, Fox Sports 1, and UFC Fight Pass this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, we have a flyweight contest featuring Ben Wen, who is 13-5, and Ryan Benoit, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up and Wen, minus 135, the comeback in Benoit, minus 105. And right now, looking over at our sponsor, fivedimes.eu, it is currently Wen, minus 145, the comeback in Benoit is plus 125. So a little bit more action coming in Wen's way, but they are getting some balance action as well. This is basically a pick 'em fight with a slight lean towards Wen. And it should be another barn burner, really, at 125. I mean, both these guys bring it. They both have very good striking, and that's what they like to do. Now, of course, they both have well-rounded skill sets, and Benoit actually at times utilizes his wrestling really well and his submission game, even though he hasn't won many fights by submission, but he definitely puts you in a spot where you have to be careful on the ground with Benoit as well. So, but along with that, in his aggression, he does give up position sometimes and does make mistakes and tends to get put on his back or gets in a bad spot himself. So he definitely has some flaws still on the ground, but he's actually a pretty underrated fighter. And at age 26, he's definitely improving. And to get that win over Pettis on his resume, that was impressive because he was getting beaten that fight before he came back and ended up obviously landing some punches and knocking Pettis out in the second round there. He has that kind of knockout power though. So Wen has to be careful, but all that being said, I do lean a little bit more towards Wen because I think he's one of these guys that throughout his career, he's just continually getting better and better and better with every fight. He's in a heck of a streak right now. He's won quite a few fights. And of course, those are outside of the UFC, but the guy is a very talented striker. He's got a lot of knockout power. He has that killer instinct on the feet. He's hard to handle because he switches things up, including his stance. And he just throws a variety of attacks at you. And he has power enough to knock you out or stun you and do some damage along the way. So Wen is a very capable knockout artist, as Oskilic found out in his last fight in Wen's debut. That was very impressive. A lot of people really had much respect, really, for Oskilic, what he has done in his UFC career thus far. So Wen going out there and just doing what he did is very impressive. So I think that just proves to you how much better, and it proves to all of us how much better he is getting, and he's definitely legit. If you look at his resume, he has 5 losses on his record. 4 of those are by knockout, but it has been a while since he's been knocked out. So I think he's tightened up that defense a little bit. His chin seems to be holding up a little bit better as well, but it is going to be tested here against Benoit, no doubt about that. I mean, he does have power. So what I think we're going to see here is just an all-out technical, somewhat technical brawl. I mean, these guys are going to look to knock each other's heads off. I do lean a little bit more towards Wen because I think he can be the more effective striker in this spot. But it should be close and it should be entertaining for sure. I think he's going to probably be able to keep off his back, or if he does get top position, he'll be in control and not make as many mistakes on the ground either. So I do lean a little bit more towards Wen and what should be an awesome fight to watch.
Yeah, this is a fight where I'm kind of matching Wen's technical precision and footwork against Benoit's brawling power. If this fight does go to the ground, yeah, Benoit has had issues in the past on the canvas, but I think he's actually the better ground fighter. So I think all those issues you can kind of throw out the window. He's a decent scrambler. He gets himself in some kooky positions and he's aggressive on the ground. So if it goes to the ground, I actually give the edge to Benoit.
Now, on the feet, Benoit has a lot of power. You saw that in the fight against Pettis, where he was getting smoked and then just clocked Pettis out of nowhere, Sergio, and put him away. So Nguyen is going to have to be very careful with that. But that being said, Nguyen is a very, very good technical striker. He moves well. He can position his opponent in bad spots. And then the second they start to slow down, he can really turn it up. And he throws good combinations as well. Benoit is definitely more of a one-punch type of guy. He likes to wing more wider looping shots. So as long as Nguyen doesn't get clipped by those, and as long as Nguyen can keep upright, I think he's going to be in a really good spot here where he'll be able to use his footwork and positioning to hit Benoit without getting hit back. Because and I do think that he's going to be in a position where as Benoit leaves openings, because he is more of a brawler, I think Wen's going to just start, you know, landing some good shots. And I think that Benoit is going to get in a bit of trouble here. I'm not sure Benoit will get knocked out because, you know, he does have a really good chin. But I can definitely see Nguyen walking away with a decision, winning at least two rounds, if not all three, due to technical precision and footwork on the feet. So my pick is Ben Nguyen. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have James Muntasri, who is 8-3, taking on Anton Zafir, who is 8-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have been Muntasri minus 290, the comeback on Zafir plus 210. And right now, looking over five dimes, it's Muntasri minus 320. The comeback on Zafir is plus 260. So more action coming in Mutasri's way. Not really surprised by the early action. I mean, Mutasri is a beast. No doubt about it. I mean, he's the type of guy that – talk about striking skill. The guy has technical striking. He has power with that striking. He has good takedown defense, so he's more known for his stand-up game, but he's really worked hard and improved his wrestling, his takedown game, his submission game. He has a little bit of everything, which you want to see, but he's definitely more feared on the feet, and for a good reason. I mean, the guy, like I said, he's just a beast. Unfortunately for him, in his last fight, he ran into a buzzsaw on Kevin Lee. That was a really impressive performance by Kevin Lee. Wasn't surprised that he got the job done and beating Muntasri, but the way he went about it. So Kevin Lee was impressive. Muntasri kind of made you scratch your head a little bit and think, man, I mean, am I maybe overhyping this guy? Am I giving him too much credit? I don't think that's the case. I just think that he just got outclassed and outmatched by just a great fighter. So against Zafir, making his UFC debut here on short notice, I should mention as well, he's not going to have to worry about that dominant performance or that type of level. He's going to have definitely a step down in competition. Now, Zafir, got to give him credit for taking this fight on short notice. And he's a pretty well-rounded fighter in his own right. He has some power on the feet. He looks to take the fight to the ground and do some damage there as well. He's capable of submitting you. He's capable of knocking you out. So he has a good all-around game. It's just the problem making your debut on short notice against a guy like Muntasri that it's very difficult to take down, and he can outstrike you on the feet and has more power and is more dangerous. That's where it's not going to bode too well for, I think, Zafir in this fight. So Muntasri, the only issue I have with him is he does tend to slow down when it gets in round two and round three. You can definitely notice a difference in his game. So Zafir's best chance, I think, is to take this thing into deep waters and maybe, you know, catch him on the ground if Muntasri does make a mistake along the way and he gets positioned, if he's able to get him down and, you know, take his back or something like that. So I think Zafir is going to either have to get lucky and kind of catch him on the feet and stun him and rock him. Or, like I said, as the fight goes on, he's going to have to probably look to end this fight on the ground. But I don't see that happening. I think Muntasri is going to sprawl and brawl. He's going to be dangerous enough that he probably puts Zafir out maybe by midway through this fight along the way. I mean, that's how dominant I think Muntasri can be. And again, the matchup and styles would really favor Muntasri in this matchup. That's why you're seeing such a decent line on him. And I think the line's about right, honestly. So I am going to pick Muntasri to win this fight, probably by stoppage. But if not, even though he does fade, and I am a little concerned with that, he still should win two out of three rounds if he doesn't get finished. So Muntasri is the pick here.
This fight, there's a couple intangibles. The main thing, though, that I think is going to be the biggest help for Muntasri is the fact that he's moving up to the welterweight division. Yeah, he had conditioning issues as a lightweight, but I think not having to cut those extra 15 pounds will actually be a big benefit to him, and maybe that will actually add a little bit to his conditioning. So we'll see how it plays out, but I really do think that's going to be a big help, a big benefit. And with Zafir, he's a guy that isn't that great overall in pure stand-up, but he's not bad at, you know, diving in at people's legs, getting takedowns, and then working people over, whether it's with strikes on the ground or when they start to transition back to their feet, he can really hammer them on the way up. And that's how he's actually picked up a few of his wins. The issue here is he was getting a lot of those takedowns against regional talent on the Australian scene. The only decent prospect he ever faced beat him. So I think, this guy is a fear. He's a part-time fighter. He is also a school teacher. He also runs his own gym, and that's the gym he trains out of as well. So he's the big fish in the little pond. And honestly, he's more of a small fish in a little pond. And I don't see him being able to really develop his game and advance like Muntasri, who is, training at Black House, expanding his game and getting better and better. Yeah, Muntasri looked bad in his last fight, but that was Kevin Lee. I think he's one of the better up-and-coming prospects in the lightweight division. So against the fear here, unless Muntasri completely fades, then I think he's going to be able to really work over Zafir in the stand-up. And Muntasri has decent takedown defense. Zafir is no Kevin Lee. Muntasri was able to stuff some decent fighters in his other bouts, Cody Pfister. He was able to avoid getting taken down by a good wrestler. He was, for the most part, able to avoid getting taken down by Joe Ellenberger, and then he turned the tides on them with some big shots. So I don't see Zafir getting a lot of easy takedowns here, even though Zafir is a natural welterweight and has won titles in the welterweight division in Australia. I think Muntasri lands some big kicks, some big knees, and unless Muntasri fades down the stretch, this is his fight to lose. So I'm going to pick Muntasri. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Richard Walsh, who is 8-4, taking on Steve Kennedy, who is 22-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Walsh -350, the comeback on Kennedy +250. And right now it is actually Walsh -330. The comeback on Kennedy is +270. So not a lot of action coming in on this fight. It's kind of steady two-way action, smaller action, and the line margins have kind of tightened up since the line's been out there. So that's what's going on here. I think a lot of people aren't just running out and trying to bet this fight either way. It's tough because you know what? Kennedy in his debut, he's better than what he showed. I mean, he just got destroyed by Sabata in that fight. And I was honestly surprised, not that Sabata won, but I was surprised how easily and how bad he made Kennedy look. So here, I think he's going to fare a little bit better against Walsh, but he has his hands full as well. Now, Kennedy, why I was so surprised is he is definitely a well-rounded fighter. Another guy that has been around for a long time. He's a savvy vet. He's 32 years old. He has a ton of experience and he has a well-rounded game. I mean, he does have some okay stand-up. Now, again, depending on the level of competition, of course, it all depends on, the matchups and styles, but he's capable of knocking people out. He's proven that. He's capable of getting the fight to the floor and submitting people as well. He does have some defensive flaws as shown in his last fight in front of many people that have seen him with his UFC debut, but before that as well. So he does have some flaws in his games. He can be knocked out. He can be submitted. And he doesn't really excel or he doesn't overwhelm his opponents in any particular area. But he is okay and he's solid. And I think that he's probably being a little bit underrated in most cases. But he is fighting a very strong, powerful guy, younger guy in Walsh that really has looked pretty good. I mean, in his last fight, of course, Walsh struggled and ended up getting caught and knocked out by a very talented fighter in Joban. And that's not really shocking to anybody either, how that went down. But he was game in that fight as well. He, of course, has shown that he's capable at times. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter was a kind of a head scratcher how he got submitted. But outside of that, he showed that he's tough to take down and he's more than capable of actually controlling the wrestling in most cases and kind of grinding on his opponents up against the cage. He has a lot of power. He hits hard. His fight IQ at times is a little bit questionable, but I think what's going to make the difference here is he has what it takes on the feet to do a little bit of damage. And then once he closes the distance, I think he's going to be able to control the clinch. He's going to end up landing a little bit more on Kennedy as well. And he should at least grind Kennedy out, for 2-3 rounds possibly and win a decision. If not, I think that Walsh is possibly capable of also knocking Kennedy out, whether it's the dirty boxing, whether he gets position on the ground and he gets top position and he starts unloading there as well. So Walsh definitely can win this fight by knockout and he can win on the cards as well. I think there's more upside to him. I think with his age, this is a good stylistic matchup for him that even though Kennedy is probably the more well-rounded fighter, still I don't think he's going to give Walsh that many problems here, even though he can be competitive in this fight. So my pick is Walsh. It seems like most people kind of agree where the line is at, and I'd be surprised if I see Kennedy pulling off the upset here, honestly.
when you look at these guys matching up, Kennedy actually is a little bit more well-rounded in his game. I mean, he's the more experienced fighter. His problem, though, is he spent way too much of his time just training and fighting in the Australian scene. And Richard Walsh has been in the UFC for a while now. He's stepped in there against some good competition. He's had competitive fights. He's had some bad fights. He's had some great fights. And he's a decent overall guy. I mean, both of these guys are near the bottom of the barrel in the welterweight division. But I think Richard Walsh is just a little bit further up, a couple notches, than Stephen Kennedy. Kennedy made his UFC debut on super short notice and, you know, got steamrolled. The steamroller got steamrolled by Peter Sabata. And Richard Walsh, on the other hand, you know, he ended up losing his last fight as well. But I do think that, you know, Walsh has been in there against better opposition and has competed. Walsh overall, I think, has a little bit more pure punching power. He's still only 26 years old, so he's got some room for development, and he's been training at some decent gyms. He mixes it up. He does some training at, you know, he's done training around the world. So I think Richard Walsh is just in a better spot right now at this point in his career, especially because Stephen Kennedy, he's already 32. I mean, how much more can he really add to his game? So if this fight does go to the ground, I think Kennedy will be able to hold his own, if not win portions of it. But I think on the feet, even though neither guy is great, I think Walsh would have an advantage in open space because he does pack a, you know, a decent punch. And I think Walsh can actually win the clinch game as well. So I just am not a huge fan of Kennedy. I don't think he has much to offer. I think he's really only in the UFC because he accepted a fight on a week's notice. And I think he ends up losing this one and probably getting his walking papers. So my pick is going to be Richard Walsh. Now moving on to the middleweight division, we have Daniel Kelly, who is 9-1, taking on Steve Montgomery, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Montgomery -270, the comeback on Kelly +190. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Montgomery -270. The comeback is +230. So line margins tightened up a little bit. And again, it seems like most people are kind of trying to stay away from this fight. I don't blame you there at all, honestly. I mean, you have Kelly, who, of course, is the Ultimate Fighter vet. And since he made his UFC debut, actually after the show, he's looked okay. He hasn't looked that bad, and probably better than what most of us were expecting. I mean, of course, he's got that judo background. He's a powerful guy, no doubt about that as well. So he's got the submission game to go along with a little bit of power on the feet. I mean, again, he's not going to kind of overwhelm you, but he does like to push forward and land some shots. So Kelly, I think, is a little bit better than what I expected, at least, and especially at age 38, you could tell he is improving. But that fight against Alvey last time out where he got knocked out, I mean, it was a pretty clean knockout. I mean, he was coming forward, and Alvey just put it on him and put him out there. So at age 38, getting knocked out like that, facing a guy like Montgomery, which is actually a pretty talented guy, especially offensively. He's only 24 years old. Of course, he trains with American Top Team. There's a lot of hype and buzz around this guy for a while. Of course, he ended up losing to Sims, which is honestly, I mean, Sims is fighting at a lightweight, and this fight is at 185. So he basically got knocked out by a lightweight. That's not really fair to say that, but at the same time, it's kind of what happened, even though it was at welterweight. So I think Montgomery is one of these guys that offensively, he's very dangerous. You got to be careful. He's long. He's going to have a 5-inch reach advantage over Kelly here. He has all sorts of power on the feet. He can win in multiple ways with knees, with elbows, with punches, with kicks. He's definitely dangerous. He's got a well-rounded skill set as well. He can get on top on the ground. He could drop some bombs. Not really your what you want to call a submission fighter, but he's got a little bit of everything. So the best part of his game is definitely his knockout skill. And with Kelly being 38 years old and coming off a knockout loss, matchup between youth and kind of age here as well, it's hard to pick against Montgomery here. Although at the current price, it is hard to bet because you don't know what you're getting here. If Kelly can't survive it as the fight goes on, he's going to have his spots. And Montgomery's chin is definitely his biggest weakness. I mean, not only against Sims, but he was actually knocked out also on Bellator in that Fightmaster show. So Montgomery has been chin checked before. It really hasn't passed against guys with power. Kelly is a bigger fighter, so you never know. Even though I don't think it should happen, I think Kelly probably ends up getting knocked out. It's just hard to trust Montgomery, especially taking this fight on short notice and going up to 185. So I lean his way. I think he should win more times than not, and I think he probably does win early by knockout. But again, another not confident pick considering he is the better fighter here.
This fight is actually a bit tricky because Ricardo Abreu was originally supposed to face Daniel Kelly, but he got hurt, and then in comes Steve Montgomery. And Montgomery, for almost his entire career, pretty much has fought at welterweight. He was a massive welterweight. So I don't think this will be too much of an issue for him moving up a weight class. It could actually help him because this guy cuts a ton of weight to make the welterweight limit. I mean, he ended up having serious issues that forced him out of the Ultimate Fighter because of his weight cutting. And I think, moving up a weight class, it should help him, especially because he doesn't have a very good chin. And maybe that'll actually help the chin a little bit. We've seen that a little bit where fighters are able to absorb a little bit more punishment in fights when they move up, when they bump up a weight class. Now, Montgomery against Kelly, even though Montgomery is moving up, he was so big at welterweight that he's actually going to have a 4-inch height advantage and a 5-inch reach advantage over Kelly. Montgomery is also significantly younger than Kelly. I mean, Kelly's on his last legs. This guy is in his late 30s, and his last fight against Sam Alvey, I mean, he got absolutely blistered. Alvey just got in his face and took him out and then knocked him out. And I think Montgomery could do the same thing. The big issue here is Montgomery still does have those chin issues. He is taking this fight on relatively short notice, and he's coming off of a knockout loss as well against Tony Sims at welterweight. And Tony Sims is a lightweight. And despite that, though, I mean, Montgomery did look all right in that fight. I mean, he had Sims in big trouble, hurt him bad in the fight, but then the second he let down his guard going for the kill, Sims was able to clip him and put him out. So that is the big concern, is could Kelly catch him? And I'm really not convinced. Kelly isn't much of a striker. He's a judo specialist, so he needs to close the distance, whether it's in the clinch or on the ground. And if he can get it to the ground and get into opposition, great. But if he can't, I think Montgomery picks him apart from distance. Montgomery has the power advantage. Montgomery is a much more technical striker, and Montgomery's younger, so he's got a little bit more speed. And being the lighter guy, even though he's taller and longer, I think, Montgomery moving up a weight class, that should actually give him a little benefit as well. So unless Daniel Kelly is either able to keep Montgomery on his back or clip him at some point on the feet, I think Montgomery has a pretty convincing victory here. I mean, I think the line's getting a little bit out of control, but I think this is a good matchup for Steve Montgomery, so I'm going to pick him. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims in the flyweight division, we have Richie Vasulik, who is 10-4, taking on Danny Martinez, who is 17-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Martinez -150, the comeback on Vasulik +110. And since that time, there has been action on the dog. It's now -115 for Martinez. The comeback on Vasulik is -105. So Martinez still yet to win a fight in the UFC. There was a little bit of hype and buzz around him again as a prospect entering his UFC debut. Unfortunately for him, he's had a tough road. I mean, he's been matched up with some very solid fighters. Fights that a lot of people were honestly along the way expecting him to do well. And he's just kind of disappointed. They've been competitive decisions, no doubt about it, but he's lost three straight. So this is a winnable fight for him, I think. But it's going to be probably another competitive fight against Vasulik. So it's a shame that he's underperformed. Now, again, on his last fight, of course, he did take that fight on short notice. It was up a weight class. Now he's back down to 125, which should be better for him, especially with a longer camp. But he's going to, have a guy in Vasulik that's probably a little bit underrated in his own right. I mean, the guy is a well-rounded fighter. He does like to take the fight to the floor, and I think that's where he excels at the most. I mean, he's got some technical skill on the feet. But again, Vasulik is one of those guys that's really not going to dominate anybody or just overwhelm you with his striking. It's just his overall game and his technical skill set that gets the job done for him, and his fight IQ overall. The guy's put together pretty well, but there are some question marks about Vasulik as well. And it is, he does get out muscled. He does get out powered sometimes by guys that do have that superior strength. I think Martinez is going to possibly be one of those guys. I mean, both these guys are definitely capable of usually putting their opponents on their back and they're, again, controlling the fight and the tempo and have decent takedown defense overall. But I think Martinez is going to be the more powerful of the two. I think Martinez definitely hits a lot harder than Vasulik on the feet, and he is the more dangerous person. It's just what worries me about Martinez, he does tend to get a little bit wild with his aggression at times, and he does tend to leave a little bit of openings, and he gets himself in bad spots on the ground at times with some different scrambles or whatnot as well. So he has his flaws. He tends to make mistakes, and that's kind of what lets people stay in a fight with him, and that's why his fights are so competitive at times. So This spot, though, I do lean towards Martinez because I do think he is going to, even if he hits the scorecards, I think his power along the way is going to show here. And I think he's going to be tagging Vasulik along the way. And I think that's going to probably do enough to sway the judges his way. If not, he might get the knockout win as well. It's been a while for him. And I think that Vasulik definitely has been put out in the past. And Martinez is a kind of heavy hitter, even at 125, that he could possibly do that. So it's another scenario for me where I can see Martinez possibly finishing Vasulik. I don't really see Vasulik finishing Martinez, though. And I think Martinez can also win on the scorecards, even though Vasulik probably will keep things close. So the line where it's at now, I do lean towards Martinez. I think he should be a slight favorite in this fight. I'm expecting a very competitive fight, but it's hard not to pick Martinez. I think he does get his first UFC win here.
Both of these fighters are really scrappy. Vasulik likes to push a high pace and go use the ground and just try to wear his opponents down. And he's sometimes able to do that. Sometimes he's able to get a submission. And Danny Martinez, on the other hand, he's just a guy that goes right at you, very aggressive. He'll look for takedowns, or he'll try to just knock your block off with wide looping shots. I mean, there's not a lot of complicated parts of Danny Martinez's game. I mean, he just goes really hard, he wings haymakers, and he tries to knock your block off, or if that doesn't work, when he closes distance, he tries to just put you on your back. And honestly, it does work sometimes, again, especially at the lower level of competition. It's been tougher for him in the UFC because, I mean, he's faced some nasty guys. Even back in the WEC, he faced guys like Joseph Benavidez. But even in the UFC, you know, he faced Scott Jorgensen. That was a competitive fight. And then most recently, he actually bumped up on short notice for a bantamweight fight against Serwin Kikai, who's a very good fighter as well. So he hasn't looked great thus far in his UFC career. He's 0-3, but they gave him another shot because he did the UFC a favor by taking a fight on short notice out of his weight class. And I think this is a winnable fight for him. Richie Vaz is better than I gave him credit for. I mean, he's a bit of a celebrity in Australia. He likes to surf and do all kinds of stuff. I think he's done some stuff with TV. But he actually, you know, he has decent ground game. I really didn't respect him a lot because of how he performed on the Ultimate Fighter Smashes season, even though he was fighting like three weight classes out of his weight class, and then debuted in Justin Scoggins, you know, just smashed him. But I think for the most part, he's held his own against the lower tier flyweights, and Danny Martinez is a lower tier flyweight. So if Richie Vaz can, you know, withstand that early storm from Danny Martinez, he might be able to come on strong late and get a finish. The problem here is Vasulik does not have a very good chin. And even though Martinez isn't a great technical striker, if one of those big bombs that he likes to throw connects, Vasulik could be in some big trouble. Martinez did hurt Scott Jorgensen multiple times in their fight, so he could put away Vasulik. I mean, Vasulik got knocked out by that sweet chin music from Louis Smolka. He got, you know, put away by Scoggins. So I can see Danny Martinez overwhelming Vasulik if he really is able to get things going on the feet or if he's able to posture up on the ground. But Martinez also does not have the best takedown defense either. Even though he is a decent offensive wrestler, the defense, it's not great. So if Vasulik is able to get anything going, it might be his offensive wrestling, especially as this fight wears on, because Martinez usually pushes such a high pace that he runs out of steam. So I'm a little concerned about Martinez here, but I think that with the high pace he pushes, he won't get finished, and he could do enough to at least win the first two rounds, if not pick up a finish along the way. So my pick is going to be Danny Martinez, but I'm not crazy confident with it. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Anthony Perosh, who is 15-8, taking on Gian Vellante, who is 13-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Vellante, -305, the comeback on Perosh, +225. That 305 number was not good enough to keep people off Vellante. It's now -400. The comeback on Perosh is +325. Again, I really can't argue with the line move here. Vellante has been, in my opinion, one of the most disappointing fighters. I mean, I like the guy, so don't get me wrong. I think he has a lot of potential, a lot of talent, but it's just some of the losses that he's taken and you know, his cardio at times. He's looked great early on and then just kind of blown fights. And then, of course, in his last fight, even against, you know, Tom Lawler, how it all kind of went down, he was doing okay early on in that fight. And then, of course, he just got plastered. And, you know, he has a very tough and solid chin overall. I know he's been knocked out a few times. I mean, the knockout to Griggs, you can understand, it was a heavyweight. It was a long time ago. And then, of course, the Fabio fight, I mean, he was just gassing in that fight. And, of course, he had some health issues going into that fight as well. But the Lawler fight was a bit surprising how he got knocked out. Lawler does have a lot of power. But overall, what I'm trying to say is Vellante is a pretty tough guy, even though he's hittable on the feet. And that does drive me crazy to see that defense. I mean, he's able to absorb punches, and that's not necessarily a good thing because you get outscored that way as well. But overall, he could dish it out better than he could take it at some point. And his offense on the feet is definitely good. I mean, he mixes up leg kicks well. He has a lot of power. He's effective with his boxing. And against Parosh, I mean, let's not forget Parosh is 43 years old. The guy's a talented fighter. He's been underrated throughout his career, let's face it. I mean, he's one of these guys that on the ground, that's where it's at for Parosh. He has a huge advantage over most. And if he gets Vellante on the ground, for sure, I think Parosh is more than capable of finishing Vellante by sub. But the problem is Vellante has very good takedown defense. So this fight probably is going to remain upright. Now, Parosh does have a little bit of knockout power, as shown thus far in the UFC, a little bit surprising knockout power. So Vellante is hittable. So you never know, even though Parosh, I think he shouldn't really be a huge knockout threat here against Vellante, but you never know. I mean, he could land that punch and knock him out. I think Parosh has a better shot, though, at trying to give Vellante to the ground and maybe, you know, taking his back and subbing him that way. But again, as I mentioned, it's going to be difficult. Vellante is probably going to be able to keep it upright. And if it does stay upright, then Vellante is going to kind of work into his hands. He's going to be able to outstrike Parosh. He's going to be able to probably out knock out Parosh early on in this fight. That's why everybody's coming in that way. And I do agree with that. I think Vellante, he has a little bit more upside. This is another chance, again, to kind of get back on track for him. So I am picking Vellante.
This definitely seems like a fight that was made for John Vellante to get back on track with. Anthony Parosh seems like a fighter on his way out, but we've said that before about him. He's a guy that just won't quite go away. He's, you know, 40, 41 years old, and he's still in there. He's still competing, and he's still been able to pick up a few wins here and there. So, you know, Parosh is capable of, you know, some impressive things still. I mean, the guy does have a dynamic ground game. He's dangerous with submissions, and he has a little bit of power. Yeah, he's old. Yeah, he's slow. He doesn't have a great chin. So those are all big intangibles going against him, but you can't count him out completely. That being said, John Vellante, he should win this fight. I mean, he is younger. He is taller. He's longer. Everything about him, he's quicker, he's got more power, he's got a better chin, even though, you know, it has been cracked a few times. And he trains at a great environment with Chris Weidman every day. So, you know, John Vellante has everything going for him here. He just needs to live up to some of that potential and go out there and get a win. So, Vellante, I wouldn't be surprised if he went out there and landed some heavy leg kicks and maybe even put Parosh away with those, or, you know, just knocked him out straight up on the feet. And if this fight does go to the ground, Vellante does have the superior wrestling, although Parosh does have a better Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu game. So he's going to have to be careful if he does use his wrestling here. And then, of course, the thing that has plagued Vellante throughout his career, although he has shown some improvement, is his conditioning. So if he starts to slow down, maybe Parosh could do something late. But that being said, unless Vellante gets caught, you know, like he did in his last fight against Tom Lawler, then I see Vellante picking up a win here. So this fight is picture perfect, made for him to go out there and rebound. And it's probably the last time we see Anthony Parosh, but stranger things have happened. But my pick is going to be John Vellante. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Kyle Noak, who is 27-1. Taking on Peter Sobota, who is 15-4-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Sobota -165, the comeback on Noak +125. Right now, looking over at the line, it is actually Sobota -165. Noak is now +145. So line margins tighten up a little bit. There is two-way action coming in on this fight as well. And, you know, I'm a little bit surprised, honestly, that the line didn't drop for Noak. I figure that he is the more well-known fighter. I don't think a lot of people have a ton of respect for Sobota in this spot, but obviously his impressive performance in Sobota's last fight against Kennedy, how he basically steamrolled him, like we were saying, pardon the pun, earlier, I think kind of opened up some eyes. And again, before that fight against Pollock, he actually looked great as well, winning a unanimous decision there. So since he got back into the UFC, I think a lot of people are seeing what potential and what Sobota's kind of capable of, because his first run in the UFC was respectable for sure, but obviously he had three losses and ended up losing his spot on the roster against decent competition and against, again, competitive fights in most cases as well. So since that time, he did what he had to do to improve. He's still young enough. He's 28 years old. So he got himself on track. He got better in all areas of the game. And that's what you get with Sobota. I mean, the guy is a very talented fighter across the board. He's a southpaw. He has a little bit of length for the welterweight division as well. His striking is a bit underrated. He has decent wrestling, and his submission game is on par as well. So Sobota is one of these guys that you really have to fear in any place the fight goes. I mean, you have to be aware that he's capable of finishing the fight. And at the same time, he can outpoint you as well. He has a good gas tank. He has a decent fight IQ. So he's just a solid all-around fighter. Now, of course, Noak, why I'm surprised people didn't really come in on him, again, is because he's always had a little bit of hype. And I think, in my opinion, his fight against Webb was really close last time. I mean, arguably, could have went the other way. A lot of people believe that. It's hard to argue that, like I said. But I think we're starting to see a little bit of a decline from Noak. I mean, he is 35 years old now. That Cote fight was a head-scratcher for me because, I mean, I was expecting Noak to actually have the better wrestling in that spot. But credit Cote, he was able to take Noak down and control most of that fight. So he's kind of, I don't know, he's not looking that good. I think Noak is more than capable of winning fights. Obviously, he's proven that in the UFC against solid competition, but at this point of his career, I'm not sure if he can keep it up and maintain it. I mean, Noak's another guy. I was just talking about Sobota with having a well-rounded skill set. Noak has power on the feet. He's more than capable of striking his opponents, landing enough power on the feet to do some damage as well. And then he has a good submission game. So he's capable of taking the fight to the floor and submitting people. I just think he's kind of lost a step along the way here. And I think Sobota right now is actually catching Noak at a good time. I think we're seeing Sobota improve as a fighter, getting more confidence, kind of gaining momentum. And I think we're seeing Noak, even though he's coming off of a win, I think we're kind of seeing him kind of just start to decline a little bit and not be at his best. So Sobota catching Noak, not at his best, I think is a very capable win for him. So I am going to lean that way. I think right now he's just a little bit better. He's going to be a step ahead of Noak, and I'm expecting it to hit the scorecards. I don't want to see a finish either way here, even though both these guys are capable. I think they're also tough enough and smart enough to kind of withstand what each other throw, you know, their way. So I think that what's going to happen here is Sobota's going to probably win a close competitive decision on the scorecards, and he's going to have another impressive win.
This is a compelling matchup. I think about 3-4 years ago, Kyle Noak would have won it easily, but Noak does seem like he's in a bit of a decline, and Sabata's fighting right now as good as he's ever fought. I think Peter Sobota right now is more dangerous than Kyle Noak on the feet, and he's actually just as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than Noak on the ground. Noak has been controlled recently by people that took him down. You saw obviously, Patrick Cote, you know, put on a wrestling clinic against him, shocked everybody. But, you know, then his next fight, Jonathan Webb, I honestly thought he lost that fight, and he was taken down in that fight as well. So, you know, I have not been impressed by Kyle Noak since he put away Charlie Brenneman in 2012. So it's been a good solid over 3 years since he's really looked good in a fight. So I'm definitely a bit concerned about his performance as he started to age, you know, coming off of a lot of injuries. And I think, you know, Peter Sobota is really putting it all together. I mean, he had his stint, he left the UFC, but he went on fire outside the UFC, really rounded out his game, sharpened a lot of his skills, and he's a whole new man. And I think Peter Sobota right now is dangerous. He could be knocking on the door for your top 20, maybe even top 15 with this win and maybe another one. So I think Kyle Noak at this point, Sobota could get takedowns. I think Sobota is going to outstrike Kyle Noak. And I honestly think Sobota could have the better ground game than Kyle Noak. So this is Sabata's fight to lose for me. I just think he's the fresher guy with a lot more going for him at this point in his career. And his stock is still on the rise. So I'm all aboard with Peter Sobota on this fight. I really think that he has a great performance, and he's probably going to disappoint a lot of Homer Australian fans. So moving on, in the lightweight division, we have Jake Matthews, who is 9-1, taking on Akbar Areola, who is 23-9-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Matthews -505, Areola +335. And right now it is Matthews -900. The comeback in Areola is +600. So no respect for Areola here. And I mean, Matthews is an absolute stud. He's a beast. I mean, he's one of these guys, young guns that the UFC have on the roster that you know is going to actually, you know, make a run at some point, and he's going to continue to improve. And with the skill set that Matthew has, I mean, he has power. He has knockout power. I'm talking about strength overall. I should have said first. I'm sorry. He's a powerhouse. I mean, he's got the build. He's got the physique. He's got the physical attributes. And then on the feet, he does have that knockout power. He also has a pretty good submission game to go along with decent wrestling and takedowns. He's relentless. He pushes a high pace. I mean, a lot of good things to see about Matthews for sure. Now, of course, he has some holes in his game. I mean, in his last fight against Vic, it kind of showed that. He got rocked and got caught in a guillotine choke, and he lost that fight. So it was a bit of an upset there for sure. I mean, as far as most people were expecting, I think not that Vic is obviously a talented guy. So it wasn't a big shocker there, but at the same time, I think a lot of people were expecting Matthews to perform a little bit better than what he did. So credit to Vic, but this fight is not going to really be as dangerous, even though Areola has, again, a well-rounded skill set. He's got a little bit of power in the feet. And what I've been impressed with Areola is his ability to improve as he's getting a little bit older. He's had a ton of fights, but I think he is also at the best spot that he's ever been in his career. Now, of course, he's coming off of a decision loss to Tonaldo. Before that, he had, I think, even though Edwards was obviously on the decline kind of towards the end of his career, that was a big win for him and a big confidence boost as well. So Areola is the type of guy that, again, he's not going to kind of dominate you anywhere, but the ground game is where he excels at. So if Matthews does do anything stupid, he's going to get probably caught in a sub here as well. Areola loves to take the fight to the ground off his back. He can scramble out of position, try to get your back and submit you. He's dangerous with his arm bars, with his chokes. So Matthews has to be careful. But honestly, I think it's going to be hard for Areola to catch Matthews because Matthews is just going to stay active, going to stay all over him. I mean, on the feet, up against the cage, on the floor. I think Matthews is probably going to learn from his mistakes and do what everybody else obviously thinks, because, I mean, it's -900 now, so everybody thinks this is their lock of the card. Hard to argue that it's not, because Matthews is, again, on the rise, and Areola is one of those guys that I think is, even though he's at the best spot of his career, he still doesn't have a bright future ahead of him in the UFC where Matthews kind of does. So matchmaking is everything here. People are banking on Matthews coming through. I think he does probably come through. So all of you guys that hopped on that 505, I mean, you definitely have some guts here, but obviously there was some value because now the line's in -900. I think you guys are going to be happy, and I think you guys are going to be okay, and Matthews is going to come through for the win here.
Yeah, this fight to me is super one-sided. I just don't think Akbar Areola is very good. He's just a scrappy dude that likes to take fights to the ground, and if he can, he'll go for submissions. He's not very powerful. He's not very technical. I just see Jake Matthews being better than Areola in all areas, and this is actually probably the best young Australian prospect. Matthews has a good ground game, good wrestling, improving striking. He's got everything going for him. His problem was he just got a little overzealous there in his last fight against James Vick. Disrespected Vic's guillotine choke and then just kind of fell right into it. So I think this time around he's going to be highly motivated, and I expect a very, very one-sided showing. I mean, there's a reason that he's being put in the main event of the preliminary card. I think he's going to bring a lot of eyes on the Australian scene. Now, overall, Matthews is a very good wrestler. I think he actually has the best wrestling of any Australian fighter right now, even though he's extremely young, and he has a very, very aggressive ground game. So against Areola, a guy that wants this fight to go to the ground, I see Matthews being able to get that fight to the canvas. I see Matthews being, Areola almost welcoming the fight to the ground, even if he gets taken down, because maybe he thinks he can win a scramble, get the fight in transition, you know, make it interesting. But I just see Matthews being in control here, and I don't see Matthews leaving his neck out there again. I think he's going to learn from his mistakes. This is a really smart kid that has really started to put it all together, and I think that last fight was just a bump in the road, and I think that he's going to learn a lot from it, and I expect to see just a very ferocious dominant performance here. I think Ariel is just way overmatched, and I don't see him being able to get anything going. And I see Matthews winning convincingly, whether it's a very dominant decision or potentially a finish. And I would not be shocked one bit to see a big finish for Jake Matthews here. So my pick is Jake Matthews. Now kicking off the main card on pay-per-view, we have a heavyweight contest between Stefan Struve, who is 30-7, taking on Jared Rosholt, who is 13-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Struve -140, Rosholt even money was my opener. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is Struve -125, Rosholt's +105. There is two-way action coming in this fight. A lot of strong opinions either way. A lot of people believe that this is a great fight for Struve. A lot of people believe it's a great fight for Rosholt stylistically. Struve, of course, I mean, he's a seven-footer with skill, so that's always tough to deal with. He's going to have reach over most of his opponents. He's going to have almost a 10-inch reach advantage here over Rosholt as well. And he has skill on the feet. I mean, he definitely utilizes that reach well enough that he can be effective. He is going to be the better striker in this spot here. He's going to be just the better MMA fighter. I mean, mixed martial artist all around, because Struve, I think the best part of his game, arguably, depending on the situation, is the ground. But in this case here against Rosholt, Rosholt's your – obviously, he's a wrestler that's going to look to take you to the floor. He's a powerful guy. He's going to be able to get Struve on his back, I think, and he's going to probably be able to control him and land some bombs on the floor as well. So really all depends, I think, in my opinion, how this fight plays out. If it stays on the feet, even though Rosholt is a powerful wrestler that has knockout power, and Struve's chin has been somewhat suspect throughout his career, obviously, he's been knocked out six times. But he has taken at the same time. It's weird with Struve because he's eaten some punches and been able to survive and take them. But other times he just gets laid out. So it is tough to see, you know, how well Struve is going to take punishment. But Rosholt, you can say a lot of the same things. I mean, he's been wobbled on the feet. He's been knocked out as well. So Struve is more than capable of knocking Rosholt out. But I do think that Rosholt could possibly land on Struve, even though he's not the better striker. Even on the ground, I think Rosholt could land a little bit of ground and pound and possibly give him trouble there as well. But that's the game plan here. Rosholt's going to look to take the fight to the floor, going to look to control him, going to look to kind of grind out another decision. Struve's going to look to try to keep this fight upright. If it does hit the floor, he's going to look for submission game. So it's really who's going to make the first mistake or who's going to utilize their game plan the best and who's going to be more effective at it. It's a tough fight, definitely. I'm going to lean towards Rosholt, though. I think that he is going to be able to take Struve down. He is going to be able probably to avoid the submission game, and I think he's able to grind out a decision win. So I'm leaning more towards him. But this should be a pretty good fight, and this definitely has a lot riding on it here. I mean, Struve getting back on track with his recent win over Nogueira. Rosholt, a lot of people believe that he is a top-tier heavyweight, so he's got to prove that with a solid win over Struve here. So a lot riding on this fight for the future of the heavyweight division, but I'm going to lean towards Rosholt to get the win.
Yeah, and I'm going to come in on the other side. I just think that Jared Rosholt, as good a wrestler as he is, he's just flawed. I mean, he's a guy that has decent technical striking. He can hold his own on the feet, but his big issue on the feet is that he doesn't have a very good chin. I mean, Stefan Struve has a terrible chin too, but Struve at least has some power to back it up, and Rosholt doesn't. Rosholt's a guy that just grinds you out. He is the ultimate grinder in the heavyweight division, and he just gets on top of people and wears them down. And he doesn't usually wear them down to the point of getting a stoppage usually either. He just gets a decision victory for the most part. And against a guy like Stefan Struve, he's going to be in danger of being finished for the entire 15 minutes. Struve has power on the feet. He's developing his striking. He's still not great at it, but he's getting better. I mean, he was able to outstrike Nogueira in their last fight. And then on the ground, Struve has a very nasty submission game. He's got good triangle chokes. He can work for things on the canvas. He can sweep you. He doesn't have the greatest wrestling, so Jared Rosholt, I expect him to get takedowns in this fight. The problem is, will he be able to get takedowns and keep Struve down and be able to keep that going for the full 15 minutes? And I'm just not sure that's going to happen. I mean, you look at a fight like Rosholt against Alexei Olenek, who is a similar fighter to Struve, just a little shorter, but a guy that's has a very good submission game and a little bit of power on the feet, and Rosholt was aggressive with him on the feet and then got knocked out. So I can see Struve knocking Jared Rosholt out at some point in this fight, and maybe Struve could even catch Rosholt on the ground. We really haven't seen Rosholt in there against some really good submission fighters on the canvas, other than Olenek, who put him away. So I think this fight's pretty even, if Rosholt's able to get his grind on, he could definitely walk away with a decision. It's the path to victory is there, but I think the threat of the finish from Struve is very, very real. So I'm going to side with Stefan Struve. I'm not crazy confident about this one, but I just think that at some point in this fight, he catches Rosholt with either a submission or a big strike. Now dropping down to the middleweight division, we have Uriah Hall, who is 13-5, taking on Robert Whittaker, who's 14-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Hall minus 185, the comeback on Whittaker plus 145. Right now, there has been some movement. Hall is minus 130, the comeback on Whittaker is plus 110. I am a little bit surprised at the action. I know Whittaker has definitely gained a lot of respect out there from the bettors, from the MMA community in general, but Hall seems – every time I open a line, it seems to get bet up. So I overshot it a little bit because I did think the action was going to come in Hall's way here, especially coming off that impressive performance over – you know, that big W he got recently over Musasi. Even though he was losing that fight, I mean, in that second round, he did exactly what he had to do, and it was a thing of beauty with that kick. So he is just – really one of the better strikers, whether you like him or hate him. I mean, as far as skill set goes, as far as unorthodox technical skill goes, and as powerful goes, I mean, he doesn't get outstruck by a lot of people. That's something that you definitely notice. And Brian and I actually talked about this off air as well, and that's one thing that he was saying. And I've been kind of going back and forth on this fight, but you know, Brian was right mentioning that actually, that, I mean, it's hard to see Hall really getting outpointed by other strikers throughout his career. And it's true. He has a problem sometimes with being a little bit too tentative, letting some of these other guys that want to kind of grapple with him, kind of pin him up against the cage, kind of slow him down a little bit. He does have that problem, but Whitaker's going to be the type of guy that, he's going to bring it. He's going to has a ton of knockout power. He's going to make Hall kind of fight. So if that's the case, these guys are going to be exchanging, and this is going to be a heck of a fight. I mean, Whittaker, as I just mentioned, he's definitely on the uprise here. I mean, he's fighting at 185. He won the Ultimate Fighter at 185. Then, of course, he went to 170. He didn't fare as well as he liked, obviously, at 170. He had a little bit of problems. Then he came back, and he obviously at 185, he's looking a lot better than he ever has. He has a ton of power. His win over Hester was very impressive. And then, of course, his win over Tavares, I mean – it wasn't really a huge shock as far as has been known to have kind of a suspect chin, but the way he went about it, I mean, he just dominated quickly against a very game guy that was having success in Tavares. So Whittaker is a dangerous guy. I mean, he has a ton of knockout power. He has a ton of skill on the feet as well, but in his realm, I think it's more about the boxing for him. I think he's going to have to kind of try to land and at the same time defend himself around Hall's kind of unorthodox striking technique that can be effective as well. And as far as defensive skill set goes, I mean, since both these guys like to stand and bang, I think Hall is actually the better defensive fighter. Whittaker does get hit. Again, he has been knocked out in the past himself as well. So I think Hall's a little bit more technically sound on defensive end as well. And where the line is currently at right now, and with a drop, and it's kind of swaying me a little bit more towards Hall, because I do think that, again, I mean, these guys have good enough takedown defense to probably neutralize each other there. If it stays standing, I think Hall is a better, more technical striker at this point, even though Whittaker's dangerous. So I have been going back and forth, kind of changing my mind on this fight as well, but I am going to lean towards Hall because I do think he is the better striker and this fight is going to stay on the feet. He's got to be careful. Whittaker can knock out anybody, obviously, at 185, or I should say most. And then Hall, obviously, you can say a lot of the same things about him as well. So leaning towards Hall, I think he's probably going to squeak out with the win. It might be impressive. We might see a three-round war, which between these two, honestly, I think it's going to be kind of hard. There's a chance it hits the scorecards, but I mean, with so much knockout power either way, I think somebody's probably going to sleep here in this fight. So I do think that Hall's going to get the W here, so I'm going to lean his way.
Robert Whittaker has looked terrific since moving up to the middleweight division, but you know, wins over Clint Hester and Brad Tavares are one thing. I mean, those guys are decent middleweights. They're good mid-tier middleweights, but it's time for a step up. And I think actually the fight against Michael Bisping that was originally scheduled was a better fight for him. Bisping's getting a little older. He's hittable. He doesn't have a great chin. And Whittaker could take advantage of that. If all he had to do was land something big, and I think he could have actually picked up that win. I think Uriah Hall's actually a tougher opponent for him. Now, if Whittaker's really aggressive and the tentative Uriah Hall shows up, then Whittaker could win this fight by decision. But I don't really see Whittaker winning by knockout. I think Uriah Hall is a little bit better defensively. And I think Uriah Hall is just a little bit better in terms of counter-striking. And if Whitaker is really aggressive in this fight, it could play right into Uriah Hall's game. I mean, Hall's at his best when his opponents are being aggressive, coming at him, and then he's able to land something huge, whether it be, you know, some counter-striking against an aggressive Chris Lieben to end his career, or that beautiful spinning kick as Gegard Mousasi was diving in for a takedown. You know, Uriah Hall is capable of these crazy moments of violence. And yes, Robert Whittaker has a lot of one-punch power, but Uriah Hall is the more dynamic and diverse striker. So I think this is going to be the battle of Robert Whittaker's pure punching power and aggression against Uriah Hall's counter-striking and diversity. So Hall's going to have his kicking game going up, definitely. Hall does have a big 6-inch reach advantage, so Robert Whittaker moving up in weight, he is going to have an issue here. And I think, for the most part, Uriah Hall's biggest issues have been against guys that he's concerned about getting taken down, guys that, you know, are looking to put him on his back or put him against the fence. And that's really not something that Robert Whittaker is going to want to do. Whittaker wants open space, but he wants to, you know, get closer to the pocket and really start cracking with his heavy hands. And I think that's actually going to play right into Uriah Hall's counter-striking game. So I see Uriah Hall actually getting off a lot better with his strikes. Uriah Hall has better defense overall. Whittaker does leave himself open. And Whittaker did have issues in the welterweight division. Maybe, you know, that was part of, you know, all the weight he was cutting. But I don't think that 100% goes away when you move up a weight class. Maybe his chin's a little bit better now than it was, but I think, you know, when he faces somebody with some serious pop like Uriah Hall, a guy that's got a lot of momentum right now, then I think, you know, Uriah Hall could definitely land something big and put Whittaker away. So I'm going to side with Uriah Hall here, even though it's on relatively short notice. I think this is a good stylistic matchup for him, and I think he picks up the win. Now moving back up to the heavyweight division, we have Mark Hunt, who is 10-9-1. Taking on Antonio Silva, who is 19-7 with one no contest. This is a rematch of one of the best heavyweight fights of all time. So, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Hunt -190, the comeback on Silva +150. Right now it is actually Hunt -265, the comeback on Silva is +225. So action coming in on Hunt. I mean, a lot of people really don't have that much confidence, I guess, in Silva's chin, especially with all the TRT, everything going on. You know, I don't have to get too much detail there. And a lot of people believe that's why Silva did as well as he did in the first fight as well. So that was a war. That was one of the best heavyweight fights I've ever seen. I can't believe that that fight, went the distance. And I always say that. And, it's just, it is. I mean, you have a guy in Mark Hunt that is one of the hardest hitters in the entire division and in the entire sport, going against a guy that's been knocked out several times throughout his career, with a huge target on his shoulders, and Hunt wasn't able to get rid of him. So credit Silva for hanging in there, and credit Hunt actually for improving his overall game enough to basically make it interesting and not get dominated on the ground. What I thought was a possibility in that first fight as well, because Hunt still, even though he's improving and he's gotten a lot better and he's harder to take down, he's still susceptible to the takedowns, and he still get beat on the ground, especially against good grapplers. And Silva does have a good grappling game. Now, will he get the fight to the floor before it's too late? I'm not too sure. I think that Hunt probably will keep this fight upright and knock out Silva in round one. If that doesn't happen, though, you got to be a little bit concerned for Hunt, because he does tend to fade. I know he's probably going to be in pretty decent shape here in this fight, but still, I mean, he's the type of warrior that even if he's tired, he doesn't want to quit. I mean, if you look at the fight with him and Stipe, he took a beating in that fight, and he didn't want to – he had no quit in him at all. But the problem there is he did get taken down often. I know Stipe, you could say he's got good wrestling or whatnot, but Silva at times has shown that as well. So if this fight goes past round one, I think it really gets interesting again. I mean, obviously it's not a 5-round fight. It's a 3-round fight, so we're not going to see it go as long as it did, obviously, and I don't expect it again to really get out of round one. I do think Hunt probably finishes his job this time around and knocks him out. So interesting fight at where the price is right now, though. Just be careful out there. I mean, like I said, if somehow, some way the fight does kind of go past the early spot, then it could get interesting. That's my caution there. But overall, it's hard to believe that Hunt doesn't knock Silva out. Silva hasn't really looked the same since, you know, he's been through all the TRT stuff and he's been off it. I mean, his win over Pelele was impressive, got him back on track, but he wasn't looking good early in that fight either. And Pelele started gassing in that fight as well. So we could see a repeat performance here, but, you know, more than likely it is Hunt knocking him out. And that's all I'm going to say about this fight, I guess. I'll stop there.
Their last fight was incredible, went all five rounds, very back and forth, just amazing. And both of these guys have taken a beating since that fight. I think they really did a lot of damage to their overall mixed martial arts careers in that contest. And Antonio Silva has looked so slow and so hittable in since then. And Mark Hunt, same way. I mean, both of these guys really have taken a lot of damage. And they took a lot of damage in that fight. And I think overall, though, the guy coming into this fight that has a little bit of momentum, even though he's not coming in off of a win, is Mark Hunt, because he's been changing up his training. From what I've heard, he's going to be coming in a lot leaner. I think that's going to give him some speed against Bigfoot. And Antonio Silva, even though he's coming off of that win, I mean, he took a beating in that last fight too. He just survived it and then came back strong with a solid start to the second round after his opponent had spent a lot of energy. So I think what's going to happen here is Mark Hunt should be significantly better than Antonio Silva on the feet. Mark Hunt should be able to get a lot of things going in close quarters or in open space. I just see him getting the better of Silva. And unless he gets, you know, pinned against the fence and Antonio Silva starts, you know, unloading those monster ham hocks that he calls fists on the feet, or if Antonio Silva can get Hunt on the ground, that was probably the best thing that he had going for him in their last fight. Was he had a couple positions where he had some dominant positions on the ground and he was dropping some big, big, heavy ground and pound shots. And unless that happens, I see Mark Hunt just being the better striker and Antonio Silva's chin being completely gone at this point. And I see Mark Hunt clipping Silva and putting him away. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I thought Hunt would do that the last fight and he didn't. And, you know, Hunt took a complete stomping against Stipe Miocic recently. So that is something you have to put into consideration. Neither of these guys have looked good ever since that last fight. So I expect this fight to be entertaining, but I don't think it's going to be even close to the level of the last time. And I see Mark Hunt picking up the win, but I'm not confident about it because really, I'm not sure you can trust either of these guys at this point in their careers anymore. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a women's strawweight title fight between champion Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who is 10-0, taking on Valerie Letourneau, who is 8-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open your Jędrzejczyk -1425. The comeback on Letourneau +675 wasn't quite enough. Right now, it's Jędrzejczyk. I'm sorry, -2150. The comeback on Letourneau is +1300. So, parlay action, straight action coming in Jędrzejczyk's way. There is going to be some straight action coming back on Letourneau for sure at the price, no doubt about that. So we probably will see the drop at some point before the fight happens here. But as far as stylistical matchups go, I mean, you've got basically a striker versus striker in this matchup. So that is what's kind of tough here because Letourneau is a pretty good striker. I mean, maybe she's getting a little bit disrespected in this spot because she has power on the feet. Obviously she's had a career even at, you know, she was up at 135 before competing with some of those ladies and she's dropped down obviously 115 and it is a hard wake up for her every time out. I mean, she looks terrible at the weigh-ins, but you know what? It doesn't really affect her performance once she gets in there. I mean, she still looks good. She's still capable of striking. Her gas tank seems decent as well. Everything about Letourneau has been great and she's actually underrated at this point of her career, I think a little bit, but the problem is, even in her fight against Moroz, she was getting tagged and hit in that fight. And, you know, she got rocked a little bit. And against Jędrzejczyk, she is one of the best strikers in the sport, period. I mean, she's technical. She has power. I think Letourneau's kind of feed right into her hands here. So striker versus striker, and you got Jędrzejczyk being the better striker. As far as ground game is concerned, I mean, Letourneau is probably a little bit more well-rounded. She has the better ground game, but I don't think she's going to be able to obviously get Jędrzejczyk down there. I mean, she's proven that her takedown defense is amazing. So she's going to be able to keep this fight upright and she is the better striker. So at the current odds, it is getting crazy. And again, there might be actually a little bit of value on Letourneau at this point as dog or pass. I don't think she wins this fight, but she's good enough that you never know. I mean, she has that puncher's chance, I guess you could say here, but more than likely it's not going to go too well for her. I think Jędrzejczyk does land enough. Eventually at some point, she probably ends up finishing Letourneau. Jędrzejczyk is just special. So Jędrzejczyk is my official pick.
Letourneau doesn't have a puncher's chance for me, but she does have a kicker's chance. She actually does have some very good head kicks, and her kicking game is better than Young Jacek's. Young Jacek really doesn't use it. She has excellent boxing, and she'll use elbows really well in a fight, maybe knees a little bit. But for the most part, she uses her hands and her elbows. And Valerie Letourneau is long. She actually has a slight reach advantage. She's an inch taller than Young Jacek, which is surprising. But, I mean, not crazy surprising, because she is coming down from originally being a bantamweight. So she is a huge, huge strawweight. And Letourneau, even though she looks terrible on the scales, she still, you know, is able to go out there and perform. She's looked really good in her two fights in the strawweight division. And that last fight against Moroz, she got things going. She was able to outstrike a really good young fighter, and she deserved that win. And if you actually go back and look at some of her tape, I mean, her head kicks have been vicious in her career. She actually, you know, almost knocked out Sarah Kaufman when she fought her, the former women's bantamweight champion of Strikeforce, with a head kick. I mean, she dropped her. So if there's any path to victory for Letourneau, it's with her head kicks. But I don't know if she's going to get a lot of space, because Young Jacek puts so much pressure on her opponents. She just gets into stalk mode, and then she just starts walking you down and then just out-voluming you. I mean, she just picks you apart, and it's not like other fighters. I mean, she just goes and goes and goes until you just can't take it anymore. You saw it against Carla Esparza when she won the championship. I mean, she just hammered Esparza, and then the second Esparza wasn't quite able to defend it anymore, she just kept going and going until Esparza collapsed. And then Penne, she turned her face into a bloody mess, and the fight got stopped. And I can see that happening here. If Letourneau isn't able to land that Hail Mary head kick, then I see Jacek just completely blistering her. Her hands are the best of any woman in the entire UFC, better than any woman in bantamweight or strawweight. She is phenomenal with her striking, and it is scary good. And she doesn't just have great hands. I mean, she's got power, she's got speed, she's got everything going for her right now. And her takedown defense is excellent too. So even if Letourneau has a decent ground game, there's no way her wrestling is as good as Carla Esparza's or Juliana Lima's or Claudia Gadelha's. And she was able to either avoid takedowns or get right back up from all of those. So I just don't see Young Jacek being beat right now, except by somebody in that elite level that gave her a tough fight, like a Claudia Gadelha. And I just don't think Letourneau's at that level. I think Letourneau's just a stopgap while they're waiting for Gadelha to heal up from her hand injuries that she had against Jessica Aguilar. And I see Joanna Young Jacek winning convincingly, probably by second or third round stoppage, because I just don't see Letourneau being able to withstand that punishment for extended periods of time. So my pick is Joanna Young Jacek. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a women's bantamweight title fight between champion Ronda Rousey, who is 12-0, and challenger Holly Holm, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Rousey -1450, the comeback on Holm +950. And right now, again, that wasn't enough. Rousey's -1900, the comeback on Holm is +1200. I mean, we really don't have to spend a lot of time on this fight. I know it's the main event, but we basically know how this fight plays out. If it stays standing for a long period of time, Holm will have the advantage. She is a better striker, even though Rousey has improved her striking game and she has some power on the feet. Wouldn't even shock me if Rousey connected and hurt Holm a little bit. That's how much power she has, and that's how much confidence she has now standing. But that being said, Rousey's smart. She knows her biggest advantage is on the ground. She's going to look to take this fight to the ground. Once she has it on the ground, she's probably going to do what she always does best and submit the, you know, the opponent very quickly. So Holm has to realize that. I know she's training hard to keep upright. A lot of people think her footwork and her movement is going to be the key here. She's going to be able to kind of weather an early storm and not get taken down right away and kind of keep this thing going a little bit longer. That could be the case, and that's definitely what Holm's game plan has to be. She needs to try to stay on the outside, not let Rousey get that close, and try to keep the fight upright. I mean, on the ground, there's a significant advantage over Holm, as I mentioned. But at the same time, on the feet, it's a little bit – even though Holm has that boxing background and she's a world-class boxer champion, I think the gap is a little bit tighter, meaning that Rousey, if it does stay standing, Holm is definitely the better striker. But Rousey is capable of pulling off the upset on the feet, where Holm, if it gets to the ground, obviously she has no chance of pulling off the upset over a fighter like Rousey on the ground. So this is Rousey's fight to win or lose. At the current price, how could you even bet it? A lot of you guys are out there. I mean, a lot of people were coming in early at 1450, putting her in parlays or whatnot either as well. So I don't know. For me, it's a tough fight. It's a typical Rousey fight. I think the total and some other props might be more interesting to look at here in this fight. So if you guys are betting it, good luck either way. But I think that we're going to see Rousey do what she does best and probably get the fight to the floor at some point, probably in the first round, and she's going to win by submission. So not a lot to say here. As far as the sportsbooks are concerned, obviously they're going to be wanting a huge parlay buster, one of these two ladies in the title fights, one of the big favorites, Jacek or Rousey, to lose. So we're going to be rooting for some craziness to go on. But for the UFC, I guarantee you they don't want that to happen, and neither do most of the fans out there. So Rousey probably is going to do what she always does. I shouldn't even say probably. It's more than likely going to happen here. So, I mean, Rousey to win by armbar or any kind of submission on the ground once he hits the floor is probably the way it's going to go.
Yeah, just like the Letourneau fight, what Holly Holm has going for her here is her kicking game. She actually does have some solid kicks. She's long. She actually does have some slight advantages in that department over Rousey. She's got a little bit better leg reach, a little like an inch in the reach. And even though she was actually a boxing champion, I actually think that Ronda, if she wanted to, could just wade inside and try to outbox her. Not outbox her, but just land heavier shots, because Holm does have some chin issues. She was, you know, knocked out in one of the worst, ugliest knockouts in the history of women's boxing. And, you know, Ronda has a lot of power, and Ronda has a great chin. She's able to wade right through a lot of people's strikes. And if she gets inside on Holm, she could get something going. But if Ronda wants to play it smart, I think everybody knows that Ronda just needs to get inside and throw Holm on her back. And we have not seen Holly Holm on the ground at all in her UFC career yet. She's been able to avoid that situation and then just pick her opponents apart from distance. And from distance, she usually uses her kicks more than anything. She'll primarily only jab with her hands. She doesn't really throw a lot of power on the feet with her hands. Most of her finishes have been set up with head kicks. So she is dangerous in that department, but Ronda is just so ferocious, so aggressive, so quick, and so elite that I think that she walks right through whatever Holm's trying to do. And if she gets this to the ground, I think it's going to be over very quickly, because she's just able to transition to these lethal positions on the canvas so quickly. I mean, Katsingano jumped in on her and went to the ground, and the fight was over in 14 seconds. She is just so capable of going for these super fast, dangerous submissions that I don't see how Holly Holm could possibly get out of them. So I think this fight ends pretty quickly, and unless Ronda decides to be cute and try to, you know, get into a kickboxing game with an elite kickboxer. So I don't think Ronda does that. I think, you know, Ronda wants to take care of business, get this fight over with quickly, not get any injuries, and then go on and film some more movies. So I expect Ronda Rousey to win convincingly, and she is definitely my pick here. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 193. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsors, Five Dimes Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.